Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Through the Fire. I'm your host, Jamal Sylvester, a.k.a. Mr. Me Too, CEO of Beauty for Ashes, Inc. in Indianapolis, Indiana, where I work as an administrator, motivational speaker, and certified youth specialist, and a maven for you. Before we get started, I want to take this time to explain the concept behind the title of the show. I named my show Through the Fire because as we all go through our lives, we are trying to test it by life's fires. The problem is, and most people don't want to go through the fire, understanding that the fire can be any obstacle that is in the way of you progressing ahead at the things you want in life. My goal is to bring guests on the show that are knowledgeable and have tools that are needed for people young and old to make it through their fire. In order for you to get to it, whatever it may be, you have to be willing to go through it. John Mitchell said, "The finest steel has to go through the hottest fire." Tonight we will give you some tools to help you get through your fire. Tonight I have on the show author, speaker, coach, James W. Officer III. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jamal. I'm very, very, very happy, humbled, and honored to be here.
Okay. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I appreciate that. You mentioned author. I'm very excited about that. Just released my first book this year in July, so just a few months ago. The book is entitled Keep Calm and Grow Rich, A Guide to Choosing Your Destiny. But aside from that, I am a keynote speaker, coach, and primarily I spend my weeks and days as I call myself an edutrainer. Work with a lot of companies, particularly small companies, 2,000 employees or less, that don't necessarily hire a trainer, but still need skill development in soft skill areas like communication, like conflict resolution, leadership, emotional intelligence. So that's what I spend my time doing. But what really drives me to do that is a passion to develop people, see people be their best selves, help them unlock their power, their potential, help them create a plan to do so.
Okay. Who has been your greatest inspiration to the work that you're doing and how?
Interestingly, the man, Jesus Christ. And I say that because immediately, you know, we jump to the work of salvation, and I'm not discounting that at all. Please don't misunderstand me. But if I think about the man he was, the human that he was, and what he did on this earth, he sought to heal. He sought to make whole. He sought to leave every situation he found better than he found it. And he didn't just go and pray for people. He went and helped them deal with their natural needs. He helped them get where they were going. He helped them bear their load. But to do that, he didn't just do. He didn't just go and do for people. He empowered them to do for themselves. And so there have been many other men and women who have modeled their lives like that. So, I mean, I say that to say this, that Mahatma Gandhi has also been an inspiration to me. Dr. Martin Luther King has also been an inspiration to me. Former President Barack Obama has been an inspiration to me. Those people who take their gifts, take their talent, and use it to lift people, those are those people who have inspired me. But it starts with that gentleman from Galilee.
Our big brother. So how did you get started in this work?
So in 1996, I just finished grad school, and I was afforded the opportunity to teach as an adjunct professor. Now, keep in mind, I'm 25 years old at the time, and I'm teaching African-American studies class for freshmen and some sophomores, but primarily freshmen. It was a 100-level class. And so to them, I was an old guy, but in reality, you know, I was 5 or 6 years older than my students. But by the way, 1996, I'll never forget this, because this was during one of our class days. The Million Man March happened while I had a class in session. So that historic moment, as well as me just finishing grad school, having this opportunity to immediately go into it. I wasn't planning to teach. I didn't have any plans to teach, but that opened something in me that I didn't know was there. I mean, my degree is in aeronautics, and I never worked a day in that field. Yeah, I never worked a day in that field. Because I knew pretty quickly that what drove me was empowering people, educating people, educating them about who they are, educating them about their true potential, educating them about their true purpose, and, again, giving them the tools to go build their own legacy. You know, it's one thing to hand people a legacy, and that's not, and I'm not hating on people who get handed a legacy. Don't get me wrong. I'm not hating on them. But I wasn't handed a legacy. And there weren't a lot of tools I was handed. And that's no shade to my parents or my family. We just, people do, they did what they knew how to do. They fed me, they clothed me, they looked out for me, so they did what they knew how to do. But it's incumbent upon me and you and others who have this passion to do what we can to put tools in people's hands to help them build their own legacy.
Amen. Yeah, that's a hard work. It's a doable work, but it's a hard work, and it takes a very intentional and dedicated and committed person to do that work. Because as you know, being in there, you run into a lot of different obstacles, and they're mental obstacles within the people that you're working with, and you have to fight through all of that in order to be able to get through to them, to get them to find value in themselves so that they can begin to receive what you're trying to give them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when people can find and connect with that something that is meaningful, it is one of those things that will stay with them for the rest of their lives. So I mentioned that in 1996, because that's 21 years ago, I had that experience. That only lasted 4 semesters. And then that was the end of my teaching career. I went into banking beyond that and spent years in proprietary education. But through all those years, between 1996 and 2014, I'll tell you why that year is significant in a minute, but between 2006 and 2014, I never stopped finding opportunities to be in front of people, teaching, educating, coaching. And, I mean, I was doing it, wasn't making a penny, but I knew it was what I loved. I knew it was my passion. I knew it was why I was here. Like when you get to connect with that thing that you understand is why you waking up, you do it for free. You know, you do it, and you do it, and you do it, and you do it. And then in 2014, through some circumstances that we might get to throughout the conversation, but 2014, I finally decided to take this thing that I love and turn it into how I feed my family and myself. And we're 3 years in, and we're still striving and growing and really able to have impact, but literally getting paid to do what I was born to do. I can't explain that feeling.
It ain't nothing like it. As we were talking earlier, I was saying that, you know, I don't necessarily make the money that I would like to make, but not very many people do. But I can say the impact that I know that I have by showing up on people's lives is priceless, and I can't put a price on that. And so to know that me showing up is having an impact on somebody else's life is enough payment for me, because I never got into this for the money. I would love to make money, and I would love to be able to have things and do things that I would want to do for my family. But I didn't get into it for that. I got into it because, like you said, it was that thing that just I can do this blindfolded standing on my head. And it's what gives me the greatest joy. And so that's why I love doing what I do.
And frankly, Brother Jamal, there are thousands and thousands of people who are making buckets of money but can't tell that story that you just told. And I've been in the corporate world. I know what it is to, you know, bring down a six-figure salary and not be doing anything, not be contributing anything, not be making any difference. And today, and I was just having a conversation earlier today on the very same subject with a gentleman, that at this point in my life, you couldn't entice me with a corner office and a big salary. You just couldn't entice me with it. I might come in and do some contract work for you.
Right.
On my terms, but
that's what I was about to say, on your own terms.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But you wouldn't be able to entice me to put myself in the mental and emotional bondage that I didn't even realize I was in, to be frank. And if you've been charged to be a giver, a teacher, a healer, if you've been charged to be a light and food for people and you're not doing that, then you literally are not obeying God in your life.
Mm.
You know, and people, I hear people talk about it all the time, you know, you don't do this and you don't do that and you don't do this when you're a Christian. You know what I mean? To honor God.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to debate what you don't do, but I'll tell you what, I know what you better do, right? It's about what do you do to honor
right.
God. And it is to exercise in the gifts he's giving you.
So that's a segue into one of the questions that you alluded to that we will probably get into, and that's your company and the organization that you started, the Dash Masters.
Yeah.
What is it? And let's talk about it. Let's let the people know what Dash Masters is.
Sure. So to put it in a nutshell, Dash Masters is a personal and professional development company. And as in the introduction, I was sharing with you that I offer one-on-one as well as group facilitation, and mostly in areas of employment and soft skills, so the communication, all those things that employees need to be more effective, team building, conflict resolution. So that's primarily my bread and butter, Monday through Friday, and contracts, large and small. But there are always opportunities because there are far more small businesses than the larger companies. And, again, they're not going to pay $50,000 or $60,000 a year for a trainer to have on staff. But they still need those skills. So that I created Dash Masters to facilitate that, as well as the coaching and as well as the speaking comes under that. Also, Dash Masters is a publishing company. So I published my own book through Dash Masters. So it's all things development, you know, all things self-improvement, all things people. Just a little more history about it. The name of the company and the logo, if you ever saw the logo, it is a tree, a large oak tree that shows all four seasons. So the tree starts with budding leaves in the spring, then it gets full, and then the tree starts to lose its leaves in the fall, and then it's winter. And so that's the logo. And I was inspired to name the company that and develop the logo came several years after the name. But the name came in 2009. I was sitting at my grandmother's funeral, May Sue Officer. And my grandmother was a G. I mean, like, now listen, I'm not kidding, Jamal. My grandmother passed away. She was 82 years old. And she had a white Durango with 22s and a booming system. I'm not making it up. And I had a lot of people that would verify that. My grandmother, she was a God. I'm not making it up. I mean, she was a God-fearing mother of the church. Everybody loved her cooking. I mean, she was a sweet, sweet soul. But she lived every day till she wasn't alive no more. She didn't have no, you know, she lost my grandfather in 97. You would have thought maybe she would have sat down and just waited to die. Man, she started vacationing. She lived her entire life. And I sat there in her service and listened to them talk about what her life was. And I thought, man, they didn't cover half of it. And so I really thought so they were talking about, you know, I was looking at the eulogy. I'm sorry, program. And it had her year of birth and year of death. And I looked at that dash, and I said, my grandmama mastered her dash.
Wow.
And so that's where the Dash Master was born. And then I didn't think about it for a while. And then a couple years later, I was struggling with a name for my company, and my wife brought it back to my attention, you know, Dash Masters. That's where it came from. So the logo is to represent that, living fulfilled through every season of your life, as a teenager, as a young, you know, professional, in your middle age and in your old age. There's no point in your life where your hope and your dreams and your desire should expire.
Wow. And I think that's needed. And so it's great that you're going to give us some tools and talk about those things that I needed in order to do that, because we have a generation of people that are suffering, and they're suffering from toxic stress and traumatic experiences, and they've been indoctrinated to think and feel a certain type of way. And so I want to talk to you about the conscious mind and the subconscious mind and what that means to you and the work that you do.
Wow, man. You know, I tell you what, it is the core of the work I do, frankly. The subconscious mind is what we call the limbic system, the limbic part of our brain. And the conscious mind is the cortex. And I don't want to get too academic with that, but here's the point I want to make, that the limbic system or the subconscious mind is the dispatcher, is the example I use in my book, and the conscious mind is the truck driver. So we're all being guided, given instruction by our subconscious mind. What we're living out on a daily basis in our conscious mind is all being guided by our subconscious. Here's the problem. Most people are not in touch with what's happening in their subconscious mind, because most of what's there was put there by the time we were 5 years old. Our core belief system, our assumptions about the world, our assumptions, what we expect from people, what we think about ourselves, that's established long before we even go to school. Because in those early years of our life, we don't have the ability to filter what's good and bad. So you got these little babies, 1 year old, 2 year old, 3 year old, everything they're hearing and experiencing, they're absorbing. They don't have the filter to say, I don't want that in my spirit. I don't want that a part of my makeup. Everything that happens, they just absorb it. They are huge sponges. And so then we get into our life and we have these reactions that we don't understand, these weaknesses in our heart and mind. We're like, well, why am I like that? Why do I do that? Why do I say that? It is our subconscious is constantly dispatching messages to our subconscious, which doesn't have a concept of good or bad, right? Just has information. It's constantly dispatching information to our conscious mind, and we're just living it out. And most people do just that, wander through life. I call it drifters. Just go through life, going through the motions, and assuming that the life they have is the only life they can have.
Wow, that's powerful.
And of course, I don't want to get into too much detail. I don't want to get in the weeds on it, but it is really powerful, man, understanding that what we do is driven by what we are, not what we think. I mean, what we are drives what we think, and then that drives what we do. The good news is we can change it. You're not doomed to a subconscious that is counterproductive. We can change it, but it starts with recognizing, you know what, I got some beliefs that are hindering me, some beliefs that are limiting me, some beliefs that are destructive to me, and I want to change them.
So then tell our listeners, how do you reprogram the subconscious mind?
Well, there's a couple of ways. But one that is tested and tried and true is affirmations. So some of your listeners, and I know you are, but some of your listeners are old enough to remember cassette tapes. And
yeah.
So with a cassette tape, if you remember, you could put that in a tape deck, push play and record, and tape a whole new message over that tape, completely cover it. And the same, your conscious subconscious is just like that cassette. You literally can play and record a new message over it. And affirmations is one of the ways you do that. I would challenge anyone listening to, when I say affirmations, I mean positive things about the life you want. Not about what you have, but what you want. So, for example, I'll just give an example. One of my affirmations is that I am an international speaker and a best-selling author. Now, today, I am neither of those, but those are affirmations that I declare on a regular basis and continue to program my mind with those thoughts that I want to think versus those thoughts that want to challenge me, like you can't, you won't, you'll fail, right? Those things come easily. There's a great book called Self-Esteem and Peak Performance. The author's name is Jack Canfield. And in this book, Dr. Canfield says that 75% of our self-talk is negative. 75% of what we say to ourselves about ourselves is negative. So really, Jamal, we don't need outside forces to hold us back. Our own jive talk we're talking to ourselves will hold us back. Our own limiting beliefs about what we can do because of what our mama did or what our daddy did or didn't do, all of that is enough to hold us back without any other limitations. So we have to change what we're saying to ourselves if we're ever going to change how we're thinking to change what we're doing.
Man, that's true. It's funny. I was in a barbershop Monday, and we were having some barbershop talk, but it was real deep, man. It was some probably about four or five adults. It was two or three teenagers, and then there was some little shorties in there. And I was telling the one guy that I feel like as a parent and as adults, we've done our children a disservice because we've kept them away from those things that we had to go through, and it's made them soft. And I ain't going to say he checked me, but he argued it, and he said that I don't agree with you on that. And he went on to say the reason why he doesn't believe that, and he said, we spent so much time talking about the struggle and how the struggle made us when we wasn't never supposed to go through the struggle. He said a kid out in Carmel or a kid out in Geist or a kid, you know, out in Broad Ripple or Noblesville, they don't know anything about the struggle. And so they don't talk about the struggle. And so we got to quit embracing the struggle, although, you know, it did make us stronger. We were never supposed to go through that. And so we need to be speaking, and the reason why I brought it up was because he said exactly what you said. We need to be talking positive to our kids, not about what we went through and how hard it was and the struggle, but about how good it's been for them and how good it's going to be because of the fact that we see that the struggle wasn't necessary for us to get where we want and to get where we're at.
There's some real validity to that. Thank you for sharing that. Real validity. I think that, and again, that this is just my opinion. I'm not arguing the brother's point at all. That I think we definitely still need to strike a balance with that, because it's absolutely correct. The kids in Carmel and Broad Ripple and all those other places, those communities you mentioned, and I understand why you referenced them, right? They may not understand the struggle, but they don't have to because they're never going to be faced with some differential treatment that's based on nothing.
Right.
And we have to equip our children to be able to handle that because, frankly, we saw a man reach the president of the United States, the most powerful man on the planet, and still remain subject to the struggle. So it's fine. I get it. And we definitely have to be a program. And I'm not, contradicting my own words. We definitely have to be able to sustain ourselves and push past and not be limited by the opinions and thoughts of others. But for young people, we have to equip them with an understanding that this self-awareness is very important because there will be people who will attempt to define you that don't know you. And so we have to help them be able to define themselves for themselves or be crammed into someone else's definition of who they are.
Man. And that's tough. That's a tough place to be in when you haven't been properly informed or you haven't been taught, you know, how to decipher through that and how to navigate through that. And so I see a lot of our young people who they want to do better. They want better for themselves, but they don't know where to go because the people that they see and the people that they're around, on a day-to-day basis don't have what they need in order to help them get to their next. And so they continue to bump their heads up against the same wall until they meet a James officer, or they meet a Jamal Sylvester, or, you know, a lot of the other people who are doing the works that we're doing. Let's talk about the theme for the night. And I loved it when you sent it to me. You said, choose the life you want or settle for the life you get. Let's talk about that and what that means.
Yeah, it really has resonated with me for some time because, you know, there is a popular belief that, you know, we're just floating through here from birth to death and kind of what happens, happens. And I hear variations of that all the time that, you know, this is what, you know, this is, I can't control this. This is just what it is. And people resign very quickly to whatever circumstances happen in their lives, and they accept that as a final call. And I argue vehemently with that we don't have to settle for anything, that we literally can choose the life we want. But it's not just by waking up and saying, this is the life I want. There's some real work that has to be done to do that. And I'll just give what I think is the basis, and then we can go back and forth after that. But the basis of being able to choose the life you want is to establish some emotional control. That is step one. Because the life that you have right now, Jamal, and the life that I have right now, is a direct outcome of the decisions we've made. A direct outcome of the decisions we made, the good ones and the bad ones. And the decisions that we make when we are emotionally imbalanced are not ever good decisions. So the more emotional control we have, the better decisions we make. And the better decisions we make, the better outcomes we have. Mm-hmm. So we're always taught to mind our manners and control ourselves for other people's sake. We're always taught that as a societal norm, you know, control yourself, don't go off, be calm. We're told to do that. We're instructed to do that, but it's always for the benefit of others. But I submit that controlling your emotions and being able to keep yourself in check, that doesn't mean don't have emotions. It doesn't mean don't get angry. Doesn't mean don't get frustrated or sad or any of those core emotions. Doesn't mean we're afraid of them. Doesn't mean we don't want to experience them. But we want to control our emotions versus them controlling us so that we can always be conscious of the decision we're making, so that we're not looking back and saying, man, I should have, I could have, I would have made this decision, but I made that decision. And if we can maintain our emotional control, then we can stay focused on our why. If we can stay focused on our why and stay in control, we're going to make decisions that move us toward our why.
Amen.
And that doesn't mean that things don't go wrong. It doesn't mean that at all. Things go wrong. Things happen that are out of our control. You know, things do happen. But I'm borrowing this from Dr. Stephen Covey. It's not the things that happen to you that shape you. It's how you respond to them. And so the more emotional control you have, and again, I'm just laying this foundation of the importance of emotional control. The more emotional control you have, the better you can deal with things, even when it's out of your control. Because you recognize it's not what's happening. The more emotional control you have, the better you can respond to things, even when it's not in your control. I mean, something happens. Somebody hits you running in the back of your car. Somebody rob your identity. All kind of crazy things can happen to us, you know. Our heart is broken by somebody that we love. I mean, all kinds of things happen to us that are out of our control. But it's not those things that happen to us that shape us. It's how we respond to it that shapes us. If somebody makes me mad and I go off and go crazy, blow up, do something crazy, and it affects my life in a negative way, and they go on about their business.
Right.
And I'm potentially sitting somewhere in jail or sitting somewhere experiencing a real loss, not because of what they did, but because I lost control. I'm not sitting in jail, for example, because of what somebody did to me. I'm sitting in jail because I shot them.
Wow.
I'm just trying to break it way down. You know what I mean? Like,
no, you helping me. You helping me, bro. So I'm ready for the rest of the steps.
this is real stuff, you know. So that I just think that is the hinge pin, like understanding that, and then why it's so powerful. It comes to the second point is, and it's because our choices, Jamal, is the only thing that God gave us 100% control over. Think about that. I mean, we can't make a blade of grass grow. We can't do anything. We can't control anything in this universe, man. God has maintained control of all of it. Why did He give us control over our choices?
It's a good question.
Wow. And it is because therein lies the power for us to create our reality. We choose what we think about. We choose what we believe. We choose what we focus on. We choose where we spend our time. We choose how we respond to situations. We choose what we believe. We choose who we believe. We choose who we put around ourselves. And all those things are what affect our outcomes and our destiny. I hear it all the time. People always say, well, if God was a loving God, then why did He allow AIDS? Why God allow war? And why God allow this and that? And I always say that God didn't allow any of those things. All God allowed was choice, free will. And man did those things with that one thing God gave us to control, our choice. I mean, that's the power of choice. That's the power of choice right there. Everything that's negative in this world, it came by man's choice. And so if we brought about war and tyranny and sickness and crime and pain, if we brought that about by choice, then Jamal, we can bring about health and wellness and prosperity and peace and joy by choice.
So true. Wow. Sometimes we try to make it so hard, and really it's just that simple.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, and I'm all about simple. I'm just a boy from the hood who made a few right choices. So I'm gonna need you to keep it simple for me.
right.
And to me, that's real simple math, man. It's real simple math. I got into a bit of a conversation speaking of barbershop talk last week, sitting at my barber, and it was a similar conversation about youth seems to dominate a lot of our dialogue lately for those who conscious and care. But we were talking about how, one brother was saying that the young people, we were talking about young men in particular and young black men even more in particular. Although young white men, that are in economically challenged neighborhoods, they're struggling too. But we're talking about young black men, he was saying that, their environment dictates that they're going to struggle. You know, it's their environment, it's what their parent, what they're exposed to, is their lack of resources and all of those things. And we've heard that before, and I didn't disagree with him. But I added one thought, and that's what I want to share with you. And it comes back to and I'm bringing this up because it comes back to the point of choice. I didn't, again, argue with the brother that it's not, environment is not a factor, economics is not a factor, education is not a factor. All those are factors. But my stronger argument is that these young people are not the product of their environment. They're the product of their heroes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
And I didn't make that up. I don't know where I heard that or read that. I didn't make that up. But it resonated with me when I heard it. And it stuck with me. And I've been thinking about that and thinking about that. So when I heard that conversation, it came right back to my spirit that, and you know what, Jamar, it might have been you and I talking. You may have been the person who said that.
I was just about to say, when I told you.
You may have been the person who said that to me.
I said, I'm not a product. I stopped believing that I was a product of my environment. And I started to, instead I'm a product of who I looked up to.
Okay. There it goes.
Yep.
That's really, really important, man, because when you talk about this whole choice thing, just, you know, and I'm going to shut up in just a second and let you elaborate on that, but, man, you, in your own story, and I'm sure your listeners have heard your story, but you chose, you didn't choose where you were, you didn't choose anything, but you made a choice to decide who you would look at for inspiration. So I really just wanted to echo the power of choice, even for those who feel hopeless.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, a lot of times we think about our circumstances, and you know, for a lot of people they're bad. For some, it's real bad. But even in my situation, I was still on the same side of town. I just changed what I put my time into and who I was looking up to. And so instead of me being in places that I shouldn't have been, I was on the basketball court. And like you said, that was the power of choice. And it was because I wanted something. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired of my current situation. And I knew that I was at an age that I could do something about it. And I did something about it. And although it didn't pan out fully how I wanted it, it still allowed me more opportunities than I would have had I just stayed and continued to make the choice that those who went before me and my family and friends and people in my neighborhood that made, that kept them stuck. And some of them are still stuck. And so I'm thankful that whatever that was that cut that switch on and say, hey, you don't got to be this way, or you don't have to do this, you can do something else. I'm glad that it touched me, and it touched me in a way that made me chase after wanting to be a star basketball athlete like I did to perfect my craft. And so that idle time that I had was no longer. I was at the park. You didn't have to worry about where I was. I was at the park.
Yeah, yeah. So that right there is living proof of the power of choice, because you had both choices right in front of you. I mean, real time, you had both choices right there.
Yeah.
And because of the choices you made, you've had the life you've had and will continue, you know, to experience more prosperity, more peace, and more power, more impact. And you have people that you love and care about, just like I do, who made different choices, who don't have that story.
That's
and
true.
I really, it's just so important to me to empower people to not blame their circumstances on anything other than that. And I get it. Things happen that are out of your control. But then what? Like, what do you do? How do you respond
right
to that? Do you just lay down and give up and die? Or do you keep pushing? Do you recommit to your dreams and your desires? All of those are choices that we make. And for people who take that power, please, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Go ahead. Finish that.
I was just saying, for people who take that power and then don't take it for granted, you know, us talking about it right now, it might sound like, man, choice can't be that important. It can't be that powerful. It can't make that big of a difference. But I would challenge anybody to come up with anything in this earth right now, any circumstance, anything, good, bad, or indifferent, that isn't the result of someone's choices at some point. I was on an airplane last night from Green Bay, Wisconsin, to Indianapolis. I was on that airplane because December 3rd, I believe, 1904, the Wright brothers made a choice that we're going to create a machine that stays in the air and can fly people around. Because of their choices, we have an airplane. I'm just saying, everything in this earth is a result of men and women's choices. And if that's the case, and I do really embrace that and believe that, so if that's true, then that means if I can make better choices, I'm going to have better outcomes, period.
Ooh-wee. So you hooked us up with establishing emotional control. Talk to us about choices. Is there anything else you want to add to that, or were those the two main things?
Those are the two main ones, but I want to add one more that is not going to make people smile, and that is sacrifice. That is sacrifice. Choosing your destiny. Right, it requires some sacrifice, and I know that's tied to emotional control and choices. But it is sometimes we have to forego the immediate for the long term. Sometimes we have to endure short term pain for long term gain. Sometimes we have to bite our tongues to be able to talk fluently later. Sometimes we have to take a pass on getting one up to be able to step way up down the road. But it's very, very hard to do that because we're all equipped with ego. And that's, you know, that's just one of those things that we have, especially men, but everyone has a certain amount of desire to protect their turf, to protect themselves. But you think about what we lose in our desire to maintain respect, to hold down our juice, so to speak. You know, think about what we give up to do that. And it's worthwhile to mention that, you know, some fights shouldn't be fought. Some battles shouldn't be undertaken. Some arguments shouldn't be had. Because if it's not going to move you toward your goal, if it's not going to move you toward your desire, then why bother? The more we practice sacrificing our ego to maintain control, the more we'll experience the mental and emotional benefits. You literally create a new normal when you start to, you know, again, sacrifice that immediate, I got you back. You said what you said, now I said what I said. I won this argument. Yeah, that's an immediate satisfaction, but that inhibits you from ultimately what you're trying to create for yourself.
I compare that to when we were in a barbershop, we was talking, and I said, take bananas, fried chicken, homemade mashed potatoes, and corn that she cut off the cob, and you take a banquet, no disrespect to banquet, because I ate a million of their chicken dinners. But you take that and you put that in the microwave and you cook it. It's chicken, mashed potatoes, and corn. Totally different taste. There ain't no comparison. No comparison.
Right.
But it's the instant gratification. And so I feel like, you know, as a society and as people in general, you know, and the Bible says knowledge puffs up. And so I think we've gotten so smart that we've found ways to create shortcuts. And it's made us forget about process.
Wow.
And process is everything.
You know what, man, there are, and I just saw this a couple of weeks ago, so that statement you just made brought this to my mind. In fact, I think I posted it on social media because it really resonated with me, that there are 270,000 species of butterflies. 270,000 species of butterflies. And not one of those species gets to avoid the cocoon. I knew that would catch you. Right?
Wow.
Every one of them is going to go through that process to be a butterfly. Every one of them. That was striking to me because you said it, man. We do not want process. I love that. That really resonated with me.
It's the only way to get somewhere for me. Now, you know, I can't say that I always thought like that or I always believed that, but and going through a lot of what I'm going through, I understand, and especially now having a clearer mind, being more mature, I can look back and I can see what happened. Well, there were some more steps that I was supposed to complete, and I tried to skip the steps, and that's why it didn't work, because I didn't go through the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Just very profound. Very profound.
Go ahead.
I wanted to add one more principle to emotional control, focus on choices, sacrifice, and that is to exercise the God in you. And what I mean by that is that there's a difference between creating and making. If you study the scripture in Genesis, God created everything before he made it. If you read it, it'll say on the first day he created this, then it goes on to say, then he made. Because creation is a mental process. It is not a physical. It's when you make it, when you manufacture it. So if we understand that we were created in God's image and his likeness. I ain't making this up. I can point it to you. We were created in his image and likeness. Then if he was a creator, then we can create. So all this stuff I believe, I'm not just pulling it out the sky. I'm recognizing that it's the God in me because he made me in his likeness and image. He created with his words. He said, let there be light, and then there was light. And he went on to say, let there be. And so if he made me in his likeness and image, that means that my words create. So I am very mindful of what comes out of my mouth because that principle cannot be refuted. So if my words create, then that means what I say, I create. So if I say I'm never going to come up. If I say this isn't going to work, it isn't going to work. If I say that I'm being held down because I'm a black man, I'm going to be held down because I'm a black man. If I say, I am creating. And so we have to be mindful, in addition to those other three things, be mindful that God has put in us the creator in that he made us in his likeness and image. And what the creative force that he's given us is our words, just like his words. And like I said, that's not something I'm making up. The book says, in his likeness and image is how he made us. And I have to look back and see what God does and say, if my heavenly father does that, then that means he would expect something in his image and likeness to do that.
Man, that's real good, bro. Man. Well, we're coming around third base, man, so I want to take this time to give you an opportunity to give yourself a promotional plug, to talk about your book, talk about ways that our listeners can get in contact with you if they have questions or if they just want to send words of encouragement. So the stage is yours.
Oh, well, thank you very much for that. I had no expectation you would do that. I am on all social media at James Officer Speaks. Even YouTube, I have a series of 100 or so videos on YouTube at J Officer Speaks, on LinkedIn at James Officer, on Facebook at James Officer Speaks. So obviously would love to connect with your listeners. The book again has been published since July, so only a couple of months now, but it's been well received. I've gotten some amazing feedback. People telling me how they're, you know, pulling nuggets out of it, just really changing how they think about things. And that ultimately was my goal. You know, I didn't write a book to get rich. I wrote a book to get my voice out there. And I tell other people about tools to build their legacy. Well, getting a book out was a tool to help me build my legacy. That that book will live forever, far beyond me, far beyond my children, because it's out there now. So, you know, it's practicing what I preach. And it's, by the way, if I can write a book, anybody can write a book. But that's it, man. And I would love to share. The book is at Amazon. Keep Calm and Grow Rich, A Guide to Choosing Your Destiny. About 90 pages, so it's a quick read, but I think it's filled with thoughtful interchange, some ideas that you can apply immediately, and not just apply to your life, but help somebody else. You can even shoot me an email at jamesofficer3@gmail.com, and we'd love to dialogue with you. Jamar, I appreciate
that. Thank you. Man, no problem, bro. Man, it was a great show tonight. I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in. James, I was truly blessed, you know, with what you brought tonight. So I definitely honor you, and I say thank you for being a part of my show tonight. And, you know, like I said, no words can express. We just met. And so for you to step up and jump out there to be a part of the show, man, I'm deeply touched by it, man, and very thankful and appreciative.
Well, thank you, brother. And again, the synergy was automatic because your sincerity and the work that you do, the people that you've touched, you could just see it. Even when I previewed when I took a look at your website, a great, great site, but what touched me the most was the picture of you and those young people. And these weren't just young black men. You know, these are all races of people that you're reaching out to, trying to make a difference for an entire generation. And that takes the heart of God. It takes the heart of God, but it also is some hard work. So I value that work, and I look forward to serving with you more as we move down the road.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, before we leave, I want to say thank you again to my guest, James Officer III. I also want to give a big shout-out to my sponsors, Beauty for Ashes, Inc., Tribe Family Channel, and to my mentor, Bruce George, the co-founder of Jeff Poetry Jam and founder and creator of Genius is Common. Please visit www.geniusiscommon.com and express your genius. If you want to contact me, I can be reached at risethroughthefire@gmail.com. That's risethroughthefire@gmail.com. I'm also on LinkedIn at Jamar Sylvester. You can go to MrMeToo.weebly.com. I have a web page. You can go and you can see some of the things that James was speaking to. I would love to talk with you, so drop me a line. Would love to get some feedback about what you think about the show, and if you have any topics or anything that you would like me to do in future shows, please send me that information, and I'll do my due diligence to make that happen. Thanks again for tuning in to the show. My next show will be next week, November 2nd, so I got a quick turnaround. Same time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, and 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the same Tribe Family Channel. Good night and good bless.